copy writing, short version is it's your emails, your blogs, what's on your landing page, all the words that you're saying to your customer. But the art of copywriting is really using those words to persuade people to take action, because that's all we have at the end of the day is our words. In a digital world, what makes you stand out? The only way to get that message across is to have really strategic and authentic copywriting.
Hello, I'm Steve Klass with the business breakthrough you've been waiting for. We're here taking service businesses to $1 million and beyond. Let's see what kind of impact the next 30 minutes will have on your life and your business. What is going on, everyone? Welcome to another episode of Service Business Success with your host, Steve Klass. Thank you so much for tuning in. I have an incredible gal who I met at the Blocks. I know the past couple of episodes, it's been like a continuing of interviews with people from the Blocks. That's how much the show motivated me and how many cool entrepreneurs I got to meet. And Jill Pavlov Vasquez from Your Creative Concierge really stood out to me. She was a moderator, so she wasn't necessarily a judge there. And little did I know that she was also a contestant just a few months prior and was the winner of season 10, which I'm so happy to announce because they just put that episode out, which is amazing because we had to kind of keep that on the wraps. But Jill, thank you so much for coming on this show. This is going to be a delightful treat for me.
Oh, it's always a delightful treat for me to be on camera. It's where I'd like to live if I could. No, but you just had such a great spirit as well. You were my first season directing, actually, being in the pod. So it was a very, very different experience being on the other side. But it was interesting to see like who kind of stood out. And, you know, you and I are both from the Northeast area. So we're like fast talkers, use our hands. I was like, he's like my home people.
Yeah, there you go. Know? Good stuff. Yeah, for sure.
New York.
So I don't want to spoil it, but you are a master at two things that are related to business and one for public speaking. But can you take the next 60 to 90 seconds or as much time as you need, kind of let the people know what you do?
Yeah, absolutely. The short answer is I'm a copywriter and comedian. Little bit longer answer is I own Your Creative Concierge, which is a copywriting agency. We provide emails, blogs, website copy, all the different marketing copy that converts your sales. It's psychology-driven copy, and we have fun with it. It's obviously, I named it Your Creative Concierge because I believe that one of my strongest suits is creativity. And on that side, I am a comedian. I study at the Second City. I have been doing improv since I was in fifth grade. And I mean, I've probably been funny from birth, I'm guessing. I started stand-up 2.5 years ago, and the writing has really helped translate into my business as well, just giving my clients copy that's really different and unique and outside of the box and using those comedic writing skills for marketing.
So how did that feel getting up, like 2.5 years ago when you first got on stage to improv? Did it come naturally to you because you spent since you're a wee little girl kind of practicing? I mean, was it like a natural thing for you? Did you have to be pushed? Like, did you have friends say, Jill, you need to get on stage, you are hilarious? Like, walk me through a little bit of what that journey was like.
Stand-up is so much different than anything I ever did. I was a theater kid all throughout high school. I majored in theater in college. So like most of the things on stage I have done, but when it comes to stand-up, that's something that I had never conquered. It's something I never, ever thought I would even want to conquer. And I think it's because I was in a corporate job for 3 years and I had no creative outlet. And I was like, you know, I need to do something. I was like, oh, maybe I should take some stand-up classes. And I started, and it wasn't immediate. I'm still like nowhere near the level that some of my peers are. Like, it does not come naturally to me. Maybe some things here and there, like my stage presence, comes naturally, but joke structure and knowing what makes the audience laugh, there's still so much to learn. It's really hard. It's very different. And the biggest difference for me is that I loved, especially as a kid, I loved acting because I wasn't really comfortable with myself. I liked being anyone other than myself. With stand-up, except for the people that do have characters, which are very few, like Jeff Foxworthy and Larry the
Andrew Dice Clay, apparently.
Yeah, but most people don't have a character. Most people go up there and you're bearing your raw self. You're bearing these like real stories and real like self-deprecations. And it's just a lot scarier.
Yeah. And you know, it's the fear of public speaking, right? Some people rank that like above the fear of death is public speaking. So I would say even being a comedian is like one up from the public speaking element. And it's funny because I read the reason why that is. And here's something that is I found interesting. Back when we were cavemen or nomadic tribes, if you had to get in front of your fellow tribespeople and publicly speak, it was usually a case that you were presenting to defend your honor or your life. So you're almost put on trial. And that is intrinsically built into our DNA of being absolutely terrified to get in front of a crowd and bare your soul, so to speak. So it's an interesting background. And I learned that as a public speaker. I don't really get nervous when I get in front of crowds, I guess because I have no shame for the most part. But I've built up a muscle where I don't really care what people think. But believe me, that took a long time to get there. But I can't imagine how it would feel. And every comedian I know goes through this. But have you ever bombed where you said a joke and there was just silence? And what does that feel like? I'm just curious.
Yeah, I mean, we've all bombed. If you said you've never bombed, you're definitely lying. I've been lucky enough to experience that. I haven't experienced like bombing in front of a large audience. It's a lot of the times when I'll go to open mics and they're filled with like just comedians who aren't paying attention, or there's like barely anyone there. Or, you know, I did a performance that was like at a kava bar where people were like on their laptops and no one was paying attention. So it's not even about bombing, but it feels like bombing because no one's laughing and you're just up there. I one time cut my set like 2-3 minutes early because I just wanted to get off the stage. It just felt like a waste of breath. I was like, I could be home like watching Vanderpump Rules.
But you know what? It's those moments. I don't know if I ever told you this, but I was a DJ for about 10 years, like in front of like not I did that. a little bit of bars and clubs, but a lot of weddings. And you kind of go into like a little bit of a character as an MC here and there. But for me, it was the best learning experiences when I did suck. When I was like, wow, this isn't working out. Whatever I'm playing, they're not feeling it. I'm getting like not really booed, but just not feeling a vibe. I'm sure you've had the same presence where like, you know what? This is a good learning experience. I'm going to really kick ass the next set and then the next set and the next set. So that's. Putting the
it's
reps
really
in
helped to challenge my perfectionism because you really can't get up there with comedy with it completely written out and just do it like that. That's really like what I thought, like, oh, I'll have this whole script written out and I'll do it word for word. And like, that's what's going to be funny. And it's not. It's those natural moments. It's like the way that you naturally say things and things that come up organically is what makes it really funny. So it's challenged me to just get up there and not have a whole plan and just kind of see what happens.
That's
and if
cool.
It's not looking good, you have to be cool with it. I'm not cool with it when it's not good. I'm still getting there. That's the thing that like holds me back is that I'm so afraid of being bad that sometimes I won't try things. So that's like one of my biggest things I'm working on this year is just getting up there and not caring.
That's awesome. And so you mentioned that you were working like a corporate kind of 9-to-5. Prior to comedy and running your own business. What was the feeling like of like working that corporate 9-to-5? And when did you have the courage to say, this isn't really working out? I need to just do something different. Like your felt like
definitely
your soul was in the right place.
Like a lot of people, it was the pandemic. It was being in the office every day. When I went to that corporate world, I'd been out of the corporate world for a minute. So it actually felt great to be back in the corporate world. I was like, oh, I get to wear like cute clothes again. And I have health insurance and I know exactly what I'm getting paid. This is great. This is so much fun. And then I started to get really burnt out like right before COVID hit. And so when it hit, I welcomed the heck out of it. I was like, this is great. Like, I love being at home. This is so nice. And I got really, really used to that. And when they tried to bring us back into the office, I really struggled, especially because the job in itself wasn't as challenging. It wasn't very challenging for me, and it didn't take me very long to do each week. And to be honest, like most people in a corporate job, I had no motivation if my work was done to ask. And I still did ask for more work, but I had no motivation to go above and beyond because there was no reward for it.
No, it your salary like, is your salary, right.
A post-it note that would be like, here's your kudos. I think that's what they called it. It was like, here's your kudos. Like,
thanks.
No, it was no matter what you do, you get a 3% salary raise every year. You get a $100 Christmas bonus. And it was like, and I have to spend most of my waking life here in this office.
Were you a copywriter, by the way? Like, were you in that industry?
That was my first, like, copywriter position, too. I've always been a good writer, but none of my positions, I've been in marketing, but none of them were ever labeled copywriter. But I was in that position for almost 3 years.
Wow. That's, you know, it's. I went through something similar when I was in corporate America, where I would see people who were 20, 30 years older than me in their 50s and 60s, just monotony. Right. Just they've been doing the same thing in and out for 25, 30 years. I had one guy legitimately, his name was Bob. It was at a law firm. And he would walk around the office and go 785 and the next day 784. I'm like, Bob, what are you talking about? He's like, counting down days to retirement. I'm like, oh, my God. I'm like this. The writing was on the wall. But the same thing for me. Pandemic came. I mean, that was like the silver lining of just like taking a step back and realizing like, I don't want to do this anymore. So once the pandemic hit, they tried to do a call back to the office. You were like, I'm good. So out of curiosity, did you go into comedy first or did you launch the creative company, the Creative Concierge first?
It happened almost around the same time. Yeah, it was a weird succession. I got married, quit my job, started my company, and then started comedy all within the span of April through July. My therapist says I'm an all or nothing person. So I think when I go through a change, it's like a transformation.
That certainly is for sure. But so when you launched this, like how'd you end up getting your first client? Like, cause I can imagine it's like you didn't have a giant book of business waiting for you when you burned those ships, so to speak.
So I had a couple of freelance clients while I was still at my old job. I had two freelance clients. So I was lucky enough to, you know, start and it wasn't under your Creative Concierge. It was just me as Jill, as a contractor. So one of my clients, who's still my client to this day, who I've gotten probably all my biggest clients from her referrals. She's amazing. I remember I would go outside of my building at my corporate job and talk on the phone with her for hours about how to leave this place. And she kind of helped like coach me through it. And that shows like the importance of mentorship and connection, especially for people who are service providers, for people who that word of mouth, that referral is so, so important. She came to me just through a friend who knew she was looking for a copywriter, and he didn't know that, you know, I was at my corporate job, but he was like, would you want to help her out? And I was like, yeah, sure.
That's awesome. Now let's take a quick backtrack here. What exactly is copywriting? I think people hear this buzzword a lot and yes. Like you gotta have good copywriting. You have to have, you know, your copywriting is so important. Honestly, until like a year ago, I had no idea what copywriting was.
Yeah.
It was a very new field for me. So can you give us a brief synopsis of what copywriting is and why it's so important? And I will say, when I was attending the blocks, your copywriting session and Wes's were the most, and no exaggeration, the most important and positive takeaways I have from the entire show.
Oh my God, thank you. Thanks, that really means a lot. Because yeah, I think most people don't know what it is and they don't understand the importance of it. I'll start off by saying what it's not. It's not copywriting spelled C-O-P-Y-R-I-G-H-T. It has nothing to do with trademarks or patents, nothing legal, anything like that. It is copywriting, as in writing. So short version is it's your emails, your blogs, what's on your landing page, you know, all the words that you're saying to your customer. But the art of copywriting is really using those words to persuade people to take action, because that's all we have at the end of the day is our words. In a digital world, what is going to make you stand out from your competitor? Because with service-based providers, there's a million different hairdressers. There's a million different accountants. There's a million different lawyers. What makes you stand out? Well, the only way to get that message across is to have really strategic and authentic copywriting.
Absolutely. So you lead with psychology first, in a way. I think that's yes. Your secret sauce. So
yeah.
let's walk through the scenario. You are sending out cold outbound emails and you want to promote your new restaurant, your new hair salon, your wedding, whatever it happens to be. Walk me through like how you work with your clients on how to achieve that excellent copywriting that fits with their brand and kind of fits with their ethos.
Yeah. If we're talking about cold specifically, cold email is really, really hard. I work with my clients more on making connections with their customers. So that means like giving them material to be engaged in their social media, like giving them people who are already on their email list, like really tuning into those people, like customer success, like nurturing. That doesn't mean we don't do lead generation stuff, but I just wanted to like make that clear.
I probably use a bad example. I actually don't really do cold
outreach. Okay, I just want to make clear, like that's the only one facet of it. I think really where the meat is connecting with those customers, because then those are going to be the people who become your word of mouth and your literally no effort lead generation. So how do we do it? Essentially, I have a really deep onboarding process that is constantly evolving. So when I bring clients on, I really want to nail their brand voice, whether they have guidelines in place or not. I believe kind of my special sauce is the fact that I am a theater kid through and through. And I really look at my clients as taking on a role. So when I'm writing for them, I'm jumping into their voice. I'm jumping into the role of them. And that's another reason why I say psychology-driven copy, because as a trained actress, that is in and of itself psychology. Every character that I ever had to portray, I had to learn their motivations, their desires, everything that made them who they were, studying them as a human being. That was my psychology course, you know? And I actually did take psychology in college as well, just because I've always found it interesting. But that is really, you know, my last name is Pavlov for a reason. The Pavlovian response, that's exactly what we want to be doing with our customers and our potential customers, is we want to be training them to get into habits and be training them to do what we tell them to do. You know, they know when an email pops up in the inbox that, oh, there's definitely going to be that discount code, so I can't wait to open it.
That's really cool. That's really cool. And if, would you mind diving into a little bit of the psychology? So let's use that hair salon as an example, right? You have someone who has a hair salon, they ran a promotion, they capture these customers' information via emails or other contact information. How do you work with your clients to have psychology at the forefront? Like what is the one specific thing that makes someone want to read your blog post or your email or get excited about your product? And how would you suggest that if someone is doing copywriting, say, for themselves, although you probably should hire Jill. But other than that, just curious how you would work through that.
Yeah, well, there's a few different psychology triggers that can be used. And that's not to say that they should all be used all at once. And that's not to say that they're correct for every industry or appropriate for every industry. And you'll notice, once I say this stuff, you'll kind of notice this now when you see different subject lines or especially blog titles where you have to click to learn more. But for example, like curiosity, that's a big one. Anytime that, you know, you're scrolling through your feed and you find a news article that you just have to click on because you're like, wait, I cannot go on without my day without knowing this. That title made you so curious that you clicked on it. And it's usually something like, you'll never guess what, or like, here's the one thing that, you know, stuff like that. But it works. It works. And there's a cheesy way to do it, and there's a way that works to do it. And you have to be smart about it.
Yeah, you don't want to do clickbait where it's just like, there's all fluff and there's nothing to like the blog post or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. You have to be able to back it up with what's in it. Otherwise, it's never going to work again. Actually, if you look at clickbait titles, that's a great copy swipe to have. And when I say copy swipe, I mean I have like a collection of stuff that like I can refer to if I need ideas. But like those clickbaity titles, even though the stuff that follows sucks, you can learn a lot from how they use that psychological trigger to really manipulate you to open it. Because you do, and this is gonna sound awful, but you do kind of want to manipulate your customers. You want to manipulate them because you have something good waiting for them, not because you have something bad waiting for them.
You're doing something of value that you know is going to improve them.
Is all.
Absolutely. And your services, especially if you're an ethical business owner, you know is going to bring value to their lives. You know it's not just like fluff. So whether that's a hair salon, you can design someone's hair for their upcoming wedding or your local pizzeria and you have, like, you know, you have the best pizza around, like, bring your kids. It doesn't really matter what your business is. There's value there. So don't feel bad by having someone click on your ad or click on your blog post or, like, thinking of it as manipulation in that way where it's like, haha, I'm tricking them. You are tricking them, so to speak, but you're leading them to a place where the outcome is going to be solving their problem. In this case, pizzeria, could be hunger is their problem, right? Or if it's something more nuanced and you're providing a construction service, you're helping maybe renovate their tired bathroom. It doesn't really matter what the end is, as long as you're the problem solver and your copywriting is getting them to that place, for sure. That kind of ties in directly, and this is something I know you're an expert on, is branding, right? So how important are the two to have a cohesive voice?
They're like this and that, frickin' frack. They're like... You know, there's another blockster, her name is Calliope, and she and I teach sister classes. So my class is the writing class, and her class is the branding class. And you can't have one without the other. Essentially, it's very much a chicken or the egg kind of situation, because your brand determines what kind of voice you're going to talk in. It also shows the importance of your target audience as well, needing to know your target audience. That's kind of like the third kind of cousin of branding and copywriting, is that you need to know who you're talking to in order to realize who you want to be for them, if that makes sense.
It does. Putting yourself in their shoes, so to speak, right?
Yeah, absolutely. But so, yeah, you have different audiences. Someone who does ethnic hair versus someone who does men's hair only versus someone who is a color specialist versus, you know, someone who's a discount provider. They're all going to talk to their audiences differently because their audiences are all different, because they all have different personalities. So your brand has a personality too, and it needs to fit, and your messaging needs to align with that. And, you know, not to get into a completely different realm, but your visuals need to align with that too.
Absolutely. And I remember during your presentation, you went even over how your emails and how your staff respond to emails. Like, are they playful? Is it more of like formal, like lawyerly? And I don't think a lot of people really give that cadence when it comes to their company-wide responses to their clientele. Like, if you're a very playful person and smiley faces, exclamation points, but the person that you transfer onboarding to is more of like a serious facts and figures type of person, the branding experience changes. So can you speak about how would you develop that as a business owner? Like, so your messaging is conveyed. Like, is there any helpful tactics on that?
Part of my process with my clients is, I described earlier, that onboarding strategy that I do. And from there, I always record every second of those calls so that I have all that information. And I just, from there, I create a strategy document, and it has our brand voice. It has our key messaging. It has things we don't say, topics we don't talk about, words we don't use. We get into cultural sensitivities. Every single thing that you could think of to touch on when it comes to how you talk to your audience, I put that in a document. And that's one of the things that my clients get when they work with me as well. It's kind of a living document that evolves, because with marketing, with branding, with copywriting, we could know all the knowledge in the world, but sometimes we don't know until we put it out there. And it's frustrating and exciting all at the same time, but it's always changing. So we always have to be evolving. So I would just recommend to any business owner to have a document that everyone on your team can access, that everyone on your team can at least comment on to, like, give their feedback, you know, even if you have to approve it, you know. And then also that way it's not always up to you to keep updating it. It evolves with you and your team.
That's so, so smart. That's an amazing advice to have, because I think a lot of business owners can tend to operate on an island, and they think that the rest of their team understands what's in their head. And like, what do you mean you don't get that? So having that cohesive document that everyone can kind of work and nurture and have shared files on is probably, I would imagine, very key on that.
And on top of that, having like a most used copy thing. Absolutely. That you can do too, because I've saved myself so much time by having a most used copy document where I can just copy and paste.
Perfect. Yeah, I love that. Now, if someone's just starting out as a startup, right, and they're trying to find their voice as a brand, they don't really know how copywriting is going to work out for them, what is the most effective copywriting to get clients and scale? Is it through like inquiry forms? Is it through blog posts? Is it like everything, like a 360 kind of operation? what would you say is the best when it comes to like new lead generation of getting people to know, build that know, like, and trust factor and fall in love with you in a relationship status of like, no, this is the person I have to use for XYZ problem?
I would say before you can do anything, you have to make sure that all of your copywriting and all of your branding about you is on point. Don't even think about talking to people if you're going to send them somewhere that's going to make them go like, nah. So make sure everything is placed. That means having a biography. So you would not believe like how many people I search and you just can't find any information. And if you can't find any information on someone in this day and age, just comes off a little bit sketch and probably isn't the person you want to do business with. And it's like, has anyone worked with them before? Like you said earlier, like, you know that the service that you're giving someone is good and it's credible and it's awesome and their life needs it, but they don't know that. They don't know anything about you. So it's not on them to figure that out. It's on you to show them why. Otherwise, they're just going to click over to your competitor because it's literally a Google search away.
Second you have on someone's website, typically. Fraction of a second. That's right.
Exactly. What are you doing to stand out? What are you doing to show that you're different, that your messaging fits your target customer? So make sure that all of that is in place. Your website, your LinkedIn, like your socials, all of that stuff. That's definitely the first thing, no matter what. It does depend on your industry. Some industries work really well with cultivating Facebook groups. It's all about making connections. However you feel like you can connect best with your customers. Maybe it's an email letter that sends them tips or checks in with them every day. It's definitely industry specific, and it's industry specific on also how often you communicate with your customers as well. I guess my recommendation to start out would be social media, just because it's such an easy touch point to kind of find your target audience. And start out with a group or a page and invite people to like it and just simply start the conversation. It's the easiest and the hardest thing to do all at the same time. But what do you want to say? What do you want to say? Some people could go on for this long and way too long. And some people have no idea, but figure out what you want to say.
That's very true. And I've learned that having a Facebook group that starts conversations of, let's say, you are you're an event planner and inviting brides to be on this Facebook page and just having a dialogue conversation of like, hey, here's top five tips. This is what I've built up for 20 years in the industry. Here's some common mistakes to avoid. Just creating that dialogue of people and building out that know, like, and trust factor from just a simple Facebook group. Even if you don't have the budget for a website or fancy like email copywriting, that's sometimes all it takes from what I've found.
You don't even need, and it's funny, I like that you said that you don't need like the fancy website. Like, you don't even need perfect grammar. And I know that sounds really weird coming from a copywriter. And like, look, I always strive to have perfect grammar, but like, that's not what people are looking for because that's not always relatable. You know, it's more important to be relatable than right, if that makes sense. We're not trying to sound smart. We're trying to make connections.
It's very true. And I have a curious personal question. How are you managing your time as a comedian and as an owner of a copywriting company and still having a level head on your shoulders?
Well, I don't have kids. I just have cats. So that definitely makes it a lot easier. That frees up a lot of time.
I hope. Let's fast forward another 30 years. Are you going to be that old cat lady?
100%. No. Yeah. Just keep cat. I have two.
Those are the most interesting people.
Ever.
There you go. But so don't get cats. But yeah, but it's, even so, I'm managing multiple businesses can be nuts. So I assume your comedy is a business into itself almost.
Yeah, I think the most difficult part is that both of them require writing. So
that's right.
It's not like I'm a boxer where at the end of the day, I can go and my creative outlet is like punching a bag and it's completely different. I have to use a little bit of the same brain, which makes it really hard. And I haven't really figured it out yet. I've learned definitely more that I'm not someone who can just be like, I have to write every day. I think I more work when I just take a day to do the comedy writing and I can live in that brain and I don't have to think about it. It's usually on the weekends when I'm more relaxed. But I'm still trying to figure it out. And that's also why delegation is so important too. I told you in the beginning, I'm actually interviewing for my first contractor after this. And that's definitely a very important part of being a business owner is knowing how much you can take on and knowing when it's more worth it to pay someone else to do it, because I probably could take on more. You know, me being me, I probably like would, but I'm trying to steer away from that and be like, no, do CEO shit.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. High level boss bitch, as they say.
Yeah.
But so are you like working Monday to Friday on this, on your copywriting business? And is every weekend you're getting on stage though, where you're flexing your comedic muscles?
No, I did go through a period where I was doing open mics every week. And then I think like the holidays came, I was pretty burnt out. And then my husband and I, we moved neighborhoods, and that was like a big thing. And I went away the blocks 3 months in a row. So I'm actually getting back on stage for the first time since November or December, in May. I just had too much going on. And again, that's why I'm finally settling and delegating and really being able to get back into it, because, you know, I'm not afraid to fail at open mics, but if I'm doing a performance, I wanna rock that shit.
Absolutely. Now, are you like writing like in a notebook? Like, I've listened to a couple of comedians kind of work through their process of like, that's a great joke, here's a one liner, and let's build a thread from there. Like, what is your creative process?
It's all over the place. As a good creative, like, chaos breeds creativity is what I've learned. But I've learned that as much as sometimes I want to sit down and force myself to write, the things that come to me when I'm at the gym, driving, in the shower, stuff like that, my best, most
the spur of the moment, like, don't know where the thought came from, but I'm going to work with this now.
It is, because when I don't think about it and I left my mind drift, sometimes that's when inspiration hits. So I have like one of the settings on my steering wheel to immediately go to voice memo, because I'll just be driving. I'm like, oh, I don't want to forget that. So I'll start talking. And then sometimes I'll just keep talking, let myself ramble and see what comes out. You know, I live in Miami, so I'm driving a lot. There's a lot of traffic. So I was thinking, how do I make this driving time productive? And that's where I do it. But it also comes sometimes when I'm writing in a notebook, because sometimes I like to, I don't know what those terms are called, but I'm like all over the place. And then I have a spreadsheet on my laptop too to like keep different ideas in check. So I have stuff all over the place.
So if I'm driving in Miami and I happen to see you pull up and you're just kind of just talking to yourself about, she's not insane, she's practicing comedy.
Okay, Danny Blank. Yeah.
She's in her own element right now.
If you see me laughing hysterically, buy a ticket to my next show. It's going to be good.
Oh, it's going to be a good one. Exactly. Oh, exactly. Yeah. Oh, that's, I love that you combine your comedic elements to your copywriting, because you are very funny when you write for your own personal copywriting. Do you think that most business owners should incorporate some type of comedy into like their copywriting? I'll use a funny example. If there's a funeral home, I feel like I would just be hitting people with jokes every single day as an inappropriate, probably would fail miserably at that as a funeral home. But I'm curious, is there room for comedy in every business?
You can make any industry funny. Yes. Look at Wendy's. No one thought slinging hamburgers was going to be like as funny and as snarky as they are. But does that mean that every business should do it and it works? No. If that's the route that you're going, you have to really lean into it. Otherwise, it's never going to land. And it has to be consistent in your voice. Otherwise, it's going to be like, what the hell? Where did that come from? So you can do it, but you just have to be really strong about it and lean into it.
Yeah, especially if your personality is like very introverted and like you have more of an engineering vine, and that comedy doesn't maybe come naturally to you, lean into that personality more. I would say what comes naturally, not like trying to be funny, or unless you have a whole social media team doing this for you. But I guess my point is that it doesn't always have to be like, let's be hilarious on every email we send out if it doesn't fit your personal vibe. Even though for me, I find it hilarious. I would love to.
Like, jazz hands. Does it? You can stand out in your power. You can stand out in your silence. Like, you know, I think about people who have really branded themselves as like calm wellness. You know, there's ways to stand out that isn't always in your face. But
and I think there's a difference between branding, right? So if you think of, let's think of Rolls Royce or a Bentley, the chic kind of James Bond-esque Aston Martin, debonair vibe. Their branding is very sleek, like wealthy, kind of affluent character that they're portraying. Or if you think of something that's more slapstick, like you think of I don't know, a Chuck E. Cheese, you instantly think of the pizza. You think of like the silly mouse who looks like he's a drug addict. Yeah, you know, but that's besides the point. Your brand, you just from an image or logo, should be setting forth those vibes of like, what am I walking into on any given basis? Let's put it that way. So I'm sure when you work with clients, are you going through the process of like, hey, what's your voice? And let's kind of bring this into your copywriting.
Yeah. Or, you know, sometimes the client doesn't know how to answer that. So I have questions that maybe make it like, if you could describe yourself, there, you know, what personality traits do you want to convey? Who do you want to be to people? Like, how do you want to talk to them? You know, there's just different questions that you can ask to get yourself there. And voices can develop too. You know, I'm working with someone who's kind of developing their voice where they're straddling the edge of being edgy, but still compassionate. And it's, again, it's a process. It's an experimentation. You know, marketing is not a one and done. And I say marketing because copywriting and design and branding, that all somewhat falls under the umbrella of marketing, I think.
Very true. Now, on your own personal business front, what's the future for scalability on your end? Like, do you want to take this where you're CEO, you have 50 copywriters underneath you, and like you're the person to be in this entire industry? Or do you want to keep it more of a smaller operation, have that lifestyle entrepreneur freedom to, you know, maybe you go into comedy full force? I'm curious, like, what's the next step for Jill?
Well, my happy place, as much as I enjoy being behind the keyboard, my happy place is on the stage with a microphone in my hands. I just love it. That's where I thrive. So what I see for the future of your creative concierge, and this absolutely was not always what I saw. If you'd asked me a year ago, I'd be like, no, I'm going to keep it small. I want to have other people working under me, and I want them to mostly be comedians or comedy based, because I love to give people in the industry a way to make solid, decent money, and a way that they can do it on their time, you know, where they don't have to go into the hospitality industry and worry about if they're going to make those auditions or whatever it is, or, you know, not to get into a completely different topic, but I'm also in recovery. So it's important to me to provide a safe place where people can make money, because the hospitality industry might not be safe for some comedians because half of them are alcoholics.
Right. They're exposed to a lot of, a lot of vices, so to speak. Yeah. It can be very tempting.
Yeah. Sure. So my vision is to have a lot of different comedy writers who are essentially different concierges eventually, like your snarky concierge, your sarcastic concierge, or whatever the kind of industry is that lends it. I haven't fully visualized it yet, but that's where I'd absolutely love it to go. And I still want to be hands-on with certain clients, the ones, you know, that I find that I can maybe have the most fun with or I enjoy, but to just have an empire.
There you go. That's awesome. I know you're going to get there step by step. So this has been a great interview. I'm going to end it the way I end all podcasts. I ask the same question from every single guest, and it's a little bit of a philosophical one. I want you to rewind the clock to a younger Jill who's maybe either fresh out of college or high school, about to get that corporate 9-to-5 job, and is relatively unsure of your future path. What advice would you give yourself, knowing what you know now? And think of it as a greater lens of the greater, wider audience. Like, what can you tell someone who's maybe younger, just trying to become an entrepreneur or is unsure of themselves? What's the best advice that you've learned now that you didn't know
from a younger self? But I think one of the things is like, don't dim your light. I was always taught not to brag and to be humble. And I think that absolutely you should be humble. And I am a humble person. But there's a way to show why you are special and why you stand out without being a bragger. And I never knew how to do that line. So I kind of just always like waited for someone to discover me, waited for someone to discover that I could do this or do that. I wasn't vocal about my talents. I wasn't telling the world what I could give it. I was just kind of sitting and hoping and waiting it would come to me. So I would tell myself to not be afraid to like shine and just put it all out there, do it all. And yeah,
I love
sparkle,
it.
Bitch.
The best. Thank you so much for that answer, Jill. If someone wants to hire you for your for your creative concierge services, what's the easiest way for someone to find you? And feel free to drop social media handles wherever you like.
Yeah, probably just go to my website, yourcreativeconcierge.com. I got my socials on there. You can even book a call with me. I do a free audit. So I look at people's web pages and give them really good advice. Really, I just had someone today and be like, wow, I can't believe we did all that in 15 minutes. So way I get to know people and see if we'd be a good fit to even work together. So yeah, come hang out with me on a call.
Yeah. And if you're in town in Miami, what's the best way to catch Jill on the mic?
Subscribe to my Instagram, Comedy Jill. I have my information out there. I have two shows in May right now. May 1st, I will be at Twisted Roots Kava Bar in Hollywood, Florida. And then May 24th, I'll be at Doghouse Theater in Delray Beach, Florida.
Amazing. Jill, this has been delightful, as I said in the beginning of the episode. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's my pleasure. And we'll see you soon. Take care.
Absolutely.
Thank you for tuning into Service Business Success with Class. Are you craving more strategies to supercharge your business growth? You can connect with me at successwithclass.com or on my Instagram at Stevie Class. And remember, when you hit subscribe, it's a win-win. You'll get your hands on all the latest tips, and you'll be supporting the show too. Thanks again for joining. Until next time.